All right. So we ready? Roll to roll right in?
Yeah, we're ready. Roll right in.
All right.
You ready to start?
Do we have a cold open?
Oh, we will.
There were about three cold opens before we started recording.
That's true. Yeah, you can pull any of those other ones. Pull my finger. No, I did that. I muted when I did that, so we wouldn't pick up on mic. Never mind. I've said too much. I give way too much information. That's me, Mr. TMI.
And still.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to Listen to The Prophets. Today, we are going back to the... Wait, no. We are... What are we doing? What are we... We're going to reminisce about things past. And with me, as always, and forever in the past, are my other Bajoran innocent victims. We have Thrax Weeder.
Can you fly, Garak?
Gol Leyland.
Ooh, guns!
And I got nothing for the other guy.
That's good, because I have no clever retort.
And so, Robo-Paul.
Give the man a hand!
The Federation doesn't like me.
And I am Dr. Bill Robinson, and I work for Ducat Jones! I work for Ducat Jones! There we go. I got my snippet in.
That's it. Bill's done for the show.
Yeah. All right, everybody. That was our episode. It was great. See you later. No. Now, we are here to discuss Season 5, Episode 8, Things Past. But before we get into the episode proper, do we have any news? I think we pretty much chewed that up last time, peeking behind the curtain. Any new news in the last hour?
I got nothing.
Negative.
Negative.
Move along.
Move along home.
Oh. Never not funny.
Yeah.
And yet you didn't take the bait.
Yeah, I was waiting.
You know, well, you know, sometimes it's better to not be predictable.
Sometimes you feel like an Al Moraine. Sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you don't, yeah.
Al Moraine's got nuts. Mounds don't. Oh, sorry.
And you took us from not predictable to predictable.
Yes.
Well, part of my name is in that word, predictable. So, there you go. All right, let's jump right into the episode.
Oh, there is a little bit of news. Star Trek the Animated Series is doing a crossover with Transformers in a new comic book.
Oh, yeah, I saw a tag for that. That's interesting.
I almost wish I was a Transformer fan, but I'm
so
not.
So do I. I mean, it may be worth a read. It may be good for a few laughs, that sounds like it could be fun. Star Trek the Animated Series meets Transformers. Mm-hmm. It's no stupider than Star Trek meets X-Men, let's be honest.
Yeah.
That really wasn't that bad, the first one.
What about the book?
I just read the comic. But yeah, they had a whole novel in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, that book made the cut when I was going through my Star Trek novels that I was decided I was going to shoot out the Jeffries tube. That I was like, yeah, you know what, I'll keep this one. Just for nostalgia.
Okay, well, that's the only thing I've just seen under the Google News. I don't know if anyone who listens to this is also a Transformers fan. If you are, read it and send us a little email telling us what it's like.
Because right. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be already...
Oh, Dave can just read it and tell us what it's like. But don't feel that you can't email in and tell us what it's like. Well, yeah. Cause, you know.
We're an interactive podcast.
Yeah, we are. We welcome all opinions.
Interactive in the fact that we're only like 2 or 3 months ahead.
Well, it's
behind.
Also a scratch and sniff, Bill.
What?
It's a scratch and sniff podcast.
I don't think we want that.
God, no, not after Bill's eating breakfast.
No.
I mean, I got cat vomit around here. And
Can't eat beans. Come out in a rash if I eat beans.
I think I'll have the fish.
They have a large selection.
Anyway.
A bizarre accident
medical emergency.
Their conscious minds are still active.
Traps the crew between realities.
Not who we seem to be.
Frozen in time.
We need to find out who we are in this reality.
Pawns in a dangerous game.
None of this makes any sense.
Their only hope of escape.
Please, listen to me!
Is buried deep in Odo's past on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The plot of our episode goes like this. Sisko, Odo, Dax, and Garak find themselves on Tarak Nor, or Tarak Noir, during the Cardassian occupation of Bajor, after encountering an anomaly on their runabout. They appear to have taken the identities of Bajorans and are imprisoned after an assassination attempt is made on Gul Dukat. Odo, after acting anxious and suspicious during these events, finally reveals that during the occupation, he allowed three Bajorans to be executed after the assassination attempt was made on Gul Dukat's life in order to maintain order on the station. He later found out that the Bajorans were innocent. Although he thought he had enough evidence for a conviction, he realized that if he had investigated further, he would have discovered the truth. He admitted that he cared more about the rule of law than justice, and he vowed never to do so again. They then wake in the infirmary where Dr. Bashir reveals that the anomaly triggered a telepathic experience similar to the Great Link. The episode ends when a disappointed Kira Nerys asks if any other innocent people died under Odo's watch. He replied that he doesn't know and that he hopes not. Play sad music.
Welcome to the Bajoran occupation. Hang Bajorans up inside. Hang them from the promenade. That's a bit grim, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think?
Heavy episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I thought this was an interesting concept. And I thought it was, you know, it was meant to be a good character episode for Odo to, you know, this is his version of I headbutted a kid with my Klingon ridges and killed him. But it just didn't have its intended impact on me. I don't know. Like, the whole thing just seemed a little bit forced. And the explanation for how it occurred didn't really go well with me. I mean, every once in a while they do this, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. In this particular instance, I felt like it didn't.
It's too telegraphed. Mm-hmm. It's too remarkably unsubtle. I mean, I joked when we just chatted through Messenger. I joked about the scene where Odo has blood on his hands, literally. Mm-hmm. And you're like, really? That's as subtle as you want to be in this show. Okay. Whereas in every other respect, yeah, it's got a great idea behind it. This idea that Odo doesn't have his hands clean. He did shitty things in the occupation, and he learned from them as grown as a character. That's all fascinating stuff. It's just the minute that we end up quantum leaping into other people's bodies, Aubergenois's performance isn't subtle enough, and I never thought I'd say that about René Aubergenois, and I did feel a little guilty about it until in The Companion he says the same thing. He says that he overplayed this one. And it's one of those things where he was so in love with this idea that Odo wasn't the squeaky clean constable everyone treats him as, that he overplayed it and he should have pulled back a little bit. And while I was watching it, I was in agreement with him. I felt that it was like I say, it was too telegraphed that Odo was involved in something shady. And I think maybe that should have been a mystery, or a bigger mystery for us as the audience and for Sisko to have to unravel, than it was. And as such, that kind of undercuts the ending a little bit. But it's beautifully shot. It's magnificent. Avery Brooks is brilliant in this episode. Mm-hmm. He underplays like a genius. There's some wonderful bits in this where he could really have been histrionic. That wonderful impression of him that Bill does, and he doesn't. He pulls back and he's really subtle. Seeing Jadzia cowering before Gul Dukat was actually chilling, because Jadzia is this very strong character, always ably played by Terry Farrell. And then when you learn later that she's acting to get in close with him and then be able to whack him over the head like she does later, that's just great stuff.
Almost like John Lovitz on Saturday Night Live when he would do the acting thing. He had to have a heart attack, and when he was acting,
yeah, and she was, and Garrick's brilliant. Garrick is as magnificent as Garrick always is.
Okay, well,
have any thoughts on this one, or should we rate it now?
I'm trying to think of how to verbalize this. I think the concept of Odo having the metaphorical blood on his hands could have been better served by a plot where this comes back in the present day, and you have somebody like Sisko or Bashir or Kira, of all people, pulling this, you know, thread, all these threads apart, and coming to the point where Odo's just has to come clean, I think that would have been much more interesting than the flashback, the quantum leaping.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't feel that the quantum leap thing worked, and I felt that the techno babble at the beginning of the episode to explain that that's what was going on was a little bit forced and cliched. I just wanted to get into the story, and I think you're right. I think that having this be a B-plot in an A-plot on Deep Space Nine that then dovetails at the end, where we learn that Odo was implicit in this execution of these three innocent people, could have been much better. And have the flashbacks to Terek Noir and still have all of that stuff. And I think that would have probably been better than what we got.
Instead of trying to veil it in science fiction somehow.
Yeah.
I think that would have made it a much stronger episode, actually, because then you could have had the emotional resonance without having to add this whole "we're Bajorans, but we're not" crap.
Yeah.
Would it have been better if they had just not even, if we didn't know they were laying in sickbay? Until the end.
Right, yeah. If we'd have not known what was happening to them until we got to the final resolution, yeah.
Right.
That could have played out as well. Because
then you're like, well, wait, is this like an orb of time thing? What's going on? How are they, you know, because then we would know, okay, well, they're safe. They're actually, you know, well, I guess we found out that they weren't totally safe, because if they incurred injury in this dream state, they was affecting their physical bodies by when Garrick gets punched in the face and then he's got blood running down his nose while he's laying on the bed. But, you know, if that had been saved until the end, oh, well, you guys were in this, you were in a great link. We also discovered that Odo still has some type of his shape-changing abilities deep within his body, at least in his brain.
Yeah, because there's nothing actually wrong with the story, is there? It's a good, compelling story. And it's like what they tried to do with Worf in the last episode, but this works, and this is better, because Odo's already a semi-tragic character anyway.
Right.
But yeah, the execution of it is just ever so slightly off. But again, the look of the show, the direction of the show, the acting, the characterization, Gul Dukat's absolutely brilliant in this. God, that man is a pompous asshole.
Yes.
And nobody does that better than Mark Alamo. He's just brilliant. And just that whole "I care too much" too speech. Much.
I see them as my children.
Yeah, just brilliantly performed.
You know,
by Alamo.
In the scheme of performances, I thought Nana Visitor's visit at the end, no pun intended, but she offset Renee Auberjonois very well, because she was very calm, very quiet, and you could just, she let her face do the talking.
His performance there, he should have played that like he did, that should have been the way he played it through the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
With the look on his face, the being unsure, not just the straight out and out, oh, every time he saw one of the, oh my God, did you see that dead guy? Holy crap.
Right, they do have an answer to our criticism in The Companion. The fans wondered, says Michael Taylor, who wrote the episode, why we didn't just do the episode in straight flashback. But to me, that was the crux of the story, because the nature of science fiction, these things aren't just gags. Odo wouldn't tell anyone this secret by choice. He would have to be forced to tell it. And if they'd done it in flashback, it wouldn't have been science fiction. Mm. But my counter-argument to that is, well, the A-plot can be a science fiction plot.
Mm-hmm.
And through that A-plot, something happens that causes Odo to have these flashbacks that reveals the B-plot that ultimately dovetails together at the end.
Yeah, I'm on the exact same page with you.
Mm. I knew there was a reason we liked you.
Yeah.
like what if one of the relatives of these, one of the Bajorans, comes to the station? And he, of course, he looks into that, and that brings up his guilt. And then he subconsciously starts to sabotage himself and brings it to the forefront.
Mm. See, if we had another interesting Bajoran character other than Kira, they could have brought that person back. But all of Kira's lovers have been just cardboard.
Or dead.
Yeah, or dead, yeah. But yeah, that probably could have worked better.
Did we just tear this episode apart?
No, it's a lot.
I feel like it's a good episode hidden within a bad premise. You know, and I think that's what we've kind of gotten to here. I don't think we've totally ripped it apart. I think it's, you know, exploring the character of Odo, showing that he's fallible. I think there's some seriously good elements in here. And I think their statement of, well, we could have done it with flashbacks, but that wouldn't have been science fiction, is almost silly, because I don't think that we needed to have every drama cloaked in science fiction. I think the premise of the series is science fiction, and we're good enough there. We don't necessarily need to explore time travel or body switching or quantum leaping or anything like that in every single episode. And I think that was where the episode stumbles. But as we're talking about it, I am developing a greater respect for the premise of the Odo plot as opposed to the mechanism that they use to execute it. I don't know if that all makes sense, but that's where I'm falling on it. I like what we did character-wise and emotional-wise and even history-wise. I just don't like the way it was executed.
Mm. The way they get into the story is the big flaw of the episode.
I mean, you wouldn't want to necessarily do this because it would be almost derivative of what they've done in the past, but you could have done something along the lines of like when they put Dax on trial for what one of her prior hosts did, and gotten into things that way. There are ways to do this, but, you know, and we're just doing this off the cuff, and, you know, that comes to mind for me. I wouldn't necessarily say do that because it's too repetitive, but definitely you could have sat down and come up with some sort of framing device of that nature that would have worked. And, you know, yes, you lose the science fiction element, and I guess there's an element of the audience that would be upset with DS9 not having a science fiction element to the storyline, but maybe you add a B-plot that has some sort of science fiction ramifications to it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're tearing this one apart. I think it's a really good episode, but I think it's a good episode more for the idea behind it and the acting and the characters than the actual plot, which, like, I think Paul used the word stumble, and I think that's the perfect description of it. The actual execution of this idea, they stumble. But the idea itself is a good one, and everybody's brilliant. And there's nothing more joyous than seeing Clarence Boddicker show up in an episode. But in addition to that, we've got Andy Robinson as Garrick, and we've got Mark Alamo back as Dukat. And they, even in the most substandard of episodes, those two elevate the material. And I think that's what they're doing in this one. I think it's a good show. It passes the Spataro flip test. I think we all seem to be on the same page that we all agree that how they executed this idea was a cock-up.
Mm-hmm. But the idea itself is solid.
Yeah.
Very solid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the character moments in there are really good. Because I do think we have a tendency to think, I was going to say think of Odo this way, but I think just in Star Trek in general, we have a tendency to often just see our primary characters as infallible. And, you know, we had the episode recently where Bashir tried to cure the planet of disease people and was only partially successful. That showed some extent of failure on his part because he was so cocky about how he was going to do it. But ultimately, I thought there was a little bit of a cop-out because although he did not rescue all the people that currently there, he rescued their planet effectively. This one is showing, Odo failed, and he's got to live with the fact that he failed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a heavy concept when you think about it, especially in the Star Trek universe where we come to think of our heroes as infallible. And in many ways, I think it makes Odo a more compelling character. So I like that aspect of it. And the more we talk about it, the more I'm liking the meat of that plot.
Yeah. Well, the scene with Kira and Odo at the end, that perfectly nails the emotion. That completely redeems the storytelling devices we've used up to that point.
Except it would have been good if it ended with Odo smacking her and saying, what, you've never failed at anything?
Oh.
Before you start judging me, look in the mirror.
Look at your boyfriends.
Yeah. So, but, I like the fact that I've kind of changed my opinion on the episode as we've gone on.
I think my rating as we've talked about I think my rating has changed. Not a lot, but it's changed.
Yeah, you're not going to, it's not likely you're going to sit there and say, boy, this sucked, and then we talk about it and you can say, 5 stars!
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. But, if it bumped up a half a point, I think that's a sign of an effective conversation. If it bumped up a full point, then that's a dramatic change. So, and I'm thinking this one definitely went up at least a half a point. I'm mulling it over in my mind whether it's even possible it went up a full point in my mind, because I started off this conversation just talking about that I kind of considered this one to be a failure, and now I'm just, you know, I'm not thinking it was a failure, but
maybe
I'm just
not
thinking
so bad.
Yeah, no, but like I said, just the execution framework is what bothered me, but the episode didn't at all. And I think I was falling too negative on the framework. So I don't know if anybody else has any plot things to discuss. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I would have, even though it would have been way too early, would have been nice if Thrax had said, "Odo, you dumbass."
Had that 70s show happened yet?
No. Right. So, yeah, that's, you know. But still, yeah, or at least a RoboCop reference. Something, man. I know.
You can't, or maybe some wink at the camera that Kurtwood Smith also played the president of the Federation in Star Trek 4.
True, yeah, that's true. With that big, long, poofy mustache.
Yeah.
I can't remember what race of beings that is.
The dumbasses.
The dumbasses. the Dumases. The Dumasians.
Different planet. Dumas.
So you're planet of dumbasses, huh? That would be when the Earth people go there. It's the planet of dumbass, honey. I can't believe we're here. We're surrounded by dumbasses. Wait, why did they give him a New York accent? Sorry, Paul.
Bastard. When I get down there to Tampa, I'm going to kick your butt.
I'm going to kick your dumbass. Huh? You like Dumas? I got you Dumas here. Oh, sorry, Paul. I'm sorry.
You stereotype all us New Yorkers, so I'm going to kick your ass.
Oh, man. And you know where I live, too. Damn.
Anyway, we should rate this now.
Really? Wow, this is a quick episode.
Short, but unless anybody's got any kind of discussions on it.
Well, we got to see Quark. Quark's dimly lit bar. Of course, it was after hours. They were cleaning. So, you know, it was very dark. Very dark on the station because they didn't have a lot for lighting. I mean, yeah, you want to give
I think during that
effect. Yeah, I think you're going to say you want to give it the effect of oppression and occupation, so you're not going to have a well-lit, cheerful station.
I think that's exactly it. During the Cardassian occupation, I think they're trying to show it was just a bleak, negative place, and maybe it's just a little too heavy-handed to have it all dark like that, but I felt like it worked anyway.
Yeah.
Not a good place to have a Rectigino back then.
I guess we'll move on to rating. I guess I'm going to give it... I think I'm going to give it 4 blasted Bajorans.
4? Wow. That's a high rating.
Yeah.
Well, I liked it. I mean, maybe because I hadn't seen it before. I do not remember this from... This is pretty much the first time I remember watching this. So I enjoyed it. Oh, I'm sticking with my 4.
I'm not asking you to change it. I just I was originally at, you know, we say 2.5 is average, and I was thinking the plot device bothered me enough that I was dropping it down to just below average, and I was going to give it a 2. Discussing it, I'm willing to. I don't think any more of the plot device than I did. I still kind of think that was a misstep, but everything else in the episode kind of came up a level in my mind, and I'm going to say instead of slightly below average, I'm going to go to slightly above average, and I'm going to move it from a 2 to a 3.
I had it at a 3, and then I wavered to a 3.5, but I think I'm going to settle on a 3, because all of the stuff that's good about it is in spite of the script, and I still think that if you've got a weak script, you've not got anything that can fire on all cylinders. Doesn't matter how good the performances are, doesn't matter how good the direction is, doesn't matter how good the set design is, and all three of those things are exceptional in this episode. I think that those three things are elevating a badly executed good idea. So I'm settling on 3.
And I'm in the exact same boat. I was at a 2.5, but our discussion brought it up to a 3, because the idea is stronger than the execution in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is things
now
past.
Now we know what we think.
And what does
Blaine say? What does Blaine say? What did he say about this episode?
See, that would be nice if every episode you came up with a new song for Blaine Says.
That was Gene Says.
But I think it's a tall order, but that's, you did it, you executed it differently. It was almost like you jumped into a former Bill Body.
What? Oh, okay.
Blaine, like us, didn't have a lot to say about this episode. Blaine said, this was, well, fine. The concept is great, and I love seeing the former role of Quark on the station. I just have issues with how long it took the crew to confront Odo. Quite literally, the only reason not to have confronted him much sooner is to pad out the runtime. It does seem to put some distance between Odo and Kira. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. Blaine. So Blaine didn't have a heck of a lot to say about this one either, but, you know, that's kind of where we are, so I guess we're in the same boat.
We don't need a bigger boat.
We don't have any email to do right now.
Nope, no email today.
And we seem to have stagnated a little on A Stitch in Time.
Yeah, but I did read. Well, I think last time we got together, we were going to do some book reviews. Did you have one ready, Dave? You had said you had read a book.
Off the cuff, it's not a DS9 book, but it is a Star Trek book. I'm trying to see what the author is. I read a book called Best Destiny, which is...
Oh, is that the one with Young
Kirk? Is
that
Diane Wayne?
Diane, yes.
I think I'm pretty sure I read that a long time ago.
Yep, and so it's a 16-year-old Kirk and how he kind of... He ends up going to space with George Kirk because Kirk, you know, little Jimmy's gotten in some trouble. And
he stole a car and drove it off the edge of a cliff.
Not far off. He tried to run away. And it was that characterization that you saw in the 2009 Star Trek where he's indignant, he's disrespectful, and through some, you know, they run into some pirates. They being George Kirk, Robert April. They're on not a runabout, but it's a predecessor to the shuttlecraft. And through this adventure, you see the Kirk we know come to be. And the framing sequence is actually right after Star Trek VI as he's coming to the end of his career. And it was not a bad read. It's not the most riveting Star Trek read I've ever taken part in, but it was an interesting read. It kind of like this episode, it was executed a bit awkwardly, but the idea was great. The idea that he sees Starfleet and how these people work together to get out of a situation, and you see some of that grit come out in little James T.
Little James T.
Yeah. If you run across it, it's worth a read.
Well,
that's our book corner for this week.
Wait, I got a book. I got a book.
Bookless Bill.
Penthouse Forum doesn't count, Bill.
Oh.
They printed his letter. They printed his letter.
To me?
It's called A Lesbian No More. Do you remember that on in Splash, John Candy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. They printed my letter. Okay.
While I was hitchhiking. No, sorry. It's Titan, Fortune of War. It's by David Mack. Ooh. And it's the... Titan is, for those who don't know, is the ship that Will Riker took over. This is after the movies. This is one of the things that's been continuing the whole Star Trek, the current Star Trek, or the Star Trek universe we know, not the Kelvinverse. So Riker finally got his own ship years ago called the Titan. Well, at this point, it's been a few years since that. Things have changed. He now has his own little mini task force group of like four ships, and I don't want to give too many things away, but he is an admiral now.
Admiral
Riker. So he's no longer in charge of the Titan, he's in charge of the task force. And the plot behind this is based off, now I know we've said in the past, like, oh, I hate it when they go back to existing episodes, blah blah blah, but this asks the question, okay, you guys remember the episode where the godlike being was living on the planet with the old lady in that little green patch of... of course, if I had time, I would have looked up what the episode actually was. Where he basically, you know, was living... I think that's it. And the Enterprise came and they found them living there. And he's like, no, we're fine. Go away. Nothing
just need more salt.
Yeah.
Move along.
That's what I was getting.
Move along. And okay, no, not that one. Not the man trap. Yeah, remember that one. Yeah, just leave all that 20 pounds of salt over there. Yeah. Pay no attention. So you find out that this race of beings known as the Hoosnock had killed everyone on the planet. And in a fit of rage, he used his godlike abilities and wiped out all the Hoosnock everywhere in the galaxy at the same time.
The women and the children.
Oh, the animals. Oh, sorry.
Sand gets everywhere.
So, and the book opens with like the leader of the Hoosnock people, and he's like, you know, oh, blah, 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 and all of a sudden, woof, they all just burn up and shoof, all their technology is left there. So now 20 years later, this technology is being discovered by certain groups and people. And I'm just going to say in this book, there are packlets. There are angry packlets, and they kind of got smart and tricky. But we always know that they're a little devious, my people. Shout out to my people. Sorry. I'm an honorary packlet. I make things go. There's also Quark. Quark's cousin, Gala, is in this. Also, there's Brunt, who is a bounty hunter now. Huh? Yeah? Anybody interested? I thought they would have got a rise out of somebody.
Ooh.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for throwing me a bone.
I'm always there for you, my friend.
So we have Brunt Bounty Hunter. I don't want to go too much into things. We have Nausicaans. We have Packlets. We have Bounty Hunters. We have the Breen. The Breen are also vying for this tech. It's a good read. It's a good read. I would recommend. I highly recommend it. Just did a Porky Pig there.
I think it's worthwhile.
It's good. Pig rating. That's what I should do. I should rate books in Porky Pig. I got another book, but I'll save that for next time.
On an all-new episode.
Don't steal Andy's bit.
Which makes me wonder, what are we doing next time?
Next time, on all-new episode of Deep
Space. No. Bring that back again.
I could do that better.
Next time on an all-new episode.
You don't follow a trumpet act with a trumpet act.
We don't need the Ray Romano version.
You know what? This we're like the opening act where you bring in the inferior rock group, and then when everybody's worked up saying, oh, that wasn't so bad, then you bring out the really good group, and people say, boy, that opening act sucked. Andy, make us suck. Go ahead.
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Odo and Quark. I almost said Odo and Worf. Odo and Quark do the Defiant Ones.
Two bitter rivals.
I've been waiting 10 years for you to get what you deserve.
Must face a deadly confrontation.
It's a bomb.
Marooned on a barren world.
We either freeze to death, starve to death.
Two enemies.
What do you hate?
You have just one chance at survival.
I'm dying!
Each other on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The Ascent.
That was much better.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I'm still mad that the last episode I didn't do the rises close, the moose up front should have told you.
They were on a quest for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so much holiday fun. What are they going to have to do to get the smile off his face?
I don't remember. I need to watch that movie again.
Great. I'll be singing Holiday Road all
yeah,
day.
Yeah, it'll be in your head. You're welcome.
Rice a road. Rice a road. Hermagerant. Hermagerant. Hermagerant.